If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to the Explorminate Podcast.
Welcome back to the Explorinate Podcast. I am your host, Rob, and joining me again tonight is Ben. Welcome back, Ben.
Hey, Rob. How's it going, man?
I didn't say Rob this time. I wanted to. I really did.
Well, you've broken the meme, I'm afraid, so I'm going to have to start again. How's it going, Rob?
Hello, and welcome back to the Explorinate Podcast. My name is Rob, and I'm here with now Drexy. What's up, Drexy?
Hey, Rob. How's it going?
All right, that's way better than me. So good. Too good. All right, you know what? We're joined by a special guest today. You may have already heard him laughing at that one. His name is Dastatic. Welcome back, Daz.
Hi, Rob and the boys.
Oh, I love it. All right, he's joining in too. Let's just pile in on me.
Do we have to do this the whole time, or is it it's just a one-off?
No, you got to do it all the time.
All the time, okay.
Oh, okay. All right. I was hoping it was just the intro, but we can do it. We can do it the whole episode if you want. But hey, we're here. I mean, first of all, I just want to just go ahead and throw this out there because it's so big. It really is the biggest thing that's happened, I think, in some time. But Age of Wonders 4 just got announced with Triumph Studios and now Paradox Interactive as its publisher. And we are definitely here to talk about that a little bit because I think we're all kind of like shell-shocked at A, just the 1 minute it was like, hey, we're going to announce something. The next minute, hey, we're not only announcing it, but we're showing 40 minutes of gameplay. And then, by the way, it's coming out in like 3 months. It was like this crazy thing that I had a hard time really wrapping my head around. But we're going to talk about that. We are. As much as we say Rab, we're going to say Age of Wonders 4. So with that being said, I watched your video, Daz, with the like very extensive breakdown on the reveal video, and I'm curious to know what you think about what was revealed.
I'm actually super excited. Like, the things that I was worried about have been addressed, I think, you know, to a certain degree. There's a few things I really, really dislike in Age of Wonders 3 and a few things I really, really dislike in Planetfall. Like, the thing I hate in Age of Wonders 3 was the halfling luck system. And we don't know exactly if that's going to be there, but it looks like, well, luck. I didn't see luck mentioned anywhere, so that was actually great. There was elusiveness, I think, which was sort of that may be luck, but I don't think it will be. Second thing, in Planetfall, I hated the random number generator with the combat, absolutely hated it. And I loved both games, but those two aspects, it looks like the luck system seems to have gone, or hopefully you can sort of get rid of it if you're wanting to. Here's the other thing. I mentioned that it's going to be the most moddable game that they've actually ever released. And I've got to say that both Planetfall and Age of Wonders 3 were pretty good with their modding. So I'm interested to see how that works as well. But overall, very, very, very happy with what I saw.
Right. And so if you haven't actually seen this reveal video, first of all, stop listening to this and go watch it, because it almost like it felt like an Apple announcement. You know how like Apple's like, oh, by the way, we're releasing it in like 2 weeks when they do their things. And that's kind of how it felt because they had so much to show. But if you haven't watched it, go watch it. And if you just want to get a little synopsis of what's probably like the main changes, I can give those to you real quick. So if you can imagine, if anybody's out there who's listening to this, hasn't seen the video, but has played Planetfall, they did carry over the Planetfall like territory system. And, you know, not much is known about whether or not they brought over too much of the unit customization. You saw some of that. So I don't know how deep that goes, if it gets as deep as the Planetfall system did. But yeah, with that, though, there is so much more. I'm trying to figure out where to start. So the main thing, I guess I could go chronologically, was that you start off with cultures. So like you choose your leader, but you also choose which race you lead. And then you choose like their culture type, which I thought was really cool because you could basically like, you could lead a peaceful group of orcs if you wanted to, or you could, you know, lead a barbarian group of orcs, which would make sense, right? And you could also do that as a human, right? You can lead the orcs as humans, almost like Sauron, you know? And that was probably the main change out the gate. And then, of course, the game looks fantastic. It's beautiful. It's got this really crisp, very clear, very polished look to it. It's still cartoonish, but it has a very fantasy-esque aesthetic, and it just looks beautiful. And they went over quite a few changes. And as Daz mentioned, you know, they have done away with some of the stuff that, you know, I think a lot of us disliked, the luck stuff from the halflings. And they also, the one thing that I was just super happy to see is that the more damaged a unit is, the less damage it can do. And I think that's something that people have been complaining about for as long as I've known Age of Wonders. And to see that being implemented was really awesome. But yeah, I mean, there's just so many things that we could talk about. If you go to the Explorminate Discord, you can go into the forums and see this like extraordinarily thorough and obsessive breakdown of every screen that they showed. And I'm here for it. I love every second of it.
I wasn't too surprised that it was coming out because some guy out there, you know, he sits around looking at who a company's employing and what they're being employed for. So he kind of dropped a hint maybe like 2-3 weeks ago.
Okay, hold on a second. All right. I will say this too. I caught on that they were doing this because I heard some things from some people that aren't supposed to be telling me anything like this way back in October, which is why I got Mormungil to do that comparison of Age of Wonders 3 and Planetfall, because I felt like maybe if there was an opportunity for Explorminate or the community really to influence the development of a game that wasn't announced yet, it would be an opportunity, or like that would be the way to do it, right? To kind of, yeah, mix and match what it is that we wanted from Age of Wonders 3 to carry over and from Planetfall to carry over. And yeah, I've heard some wins of it for some time now, and I'm just glad that it finally came out.
I'll just finish off and say that yeah, it was Daz. But I was surprised how quickly it was going to come out. I was expecting, you know, maybe summer or end of year release, and no, a couple months. And it's like, well.
Yeah, I've been going to the Triumph. Is it stalking when you do that? When you go to their website and just double check who they're employing over the last few years?
Yes,
I think it might be.
Is it stalking or is it just doing your research? I don't know. It's both, probably.
Anyway, yeah, I was checking to see who they were hiring, what sort of people they wanted, and I know that for the last year or two they've been getting 3D fantasy artists. So I was extremely hopeful it was Age of Wonders 4 and not just what's the other one they've got? Overworld?
Overlord, maybe? I don't know. Lord.
I never played the other one.
It's Overlord or something like that. It was like a third-person like army management thing. I didn't like it. But yeah, that was the other thing.
Yeah, so I watched it and I initially just kind of thought, well, it looks really similar to Age of Wonders 3. But then I watched Daz's breakdown of it, and I must admit, I skim watched it the first time around because I was kind of busy with doing other things. And I realized that I'd missed quite a lot of detail. So it is more of the same, but it looks like they've really undone some of the core game mechanics and sort of weaved in a new system, particularly with the way that you build in your, you know, your race. And rather than having units that are tied to the races specifically, you've got this kind of new system now where they have a culture. And I think that's really, really interesting. It should really drastically improve replayability of the game. So,
right. And so the other two things that really stood out to me as well is the event system, which lead your gameplay through like some sort of like story elements, narrative elements that I appreciate. And also the evolution system, which I don't know if you guys were watching, but they like added like frostling spikes to these things, and like they just, I don't know, it was just super cool to see this like this new, it looks like it's probably going to be much more detailed than what we saw, but this evolution system that is going to basically allow you to continue to evolve for lack of a better word, but you know, kind of continue to change your gameplay and adapt to your gameplay to whatever it is you're seeing. And everything about this reveal was super exciting. And I think honestly, and this is silly because I know that you can't really be right either way. I'm gonna probably just go ahead and preface this by saying that, but I feel like the release date announcement being that close has actually made it more difficult for me to wait. So I'm like, 3 months, I need 3 months to go by. And I know that there's people there playing that too. I mean, I know that there's a closed beta and I want in.
There's a few things that I was looking for, a few nuanced things, I think, which I didn't see, which I thought was, which I'm interested to see how they're going to handle flying units. I noticed the Draconians are not in the list. That's probably the one big race that's actually missing. Frostlings, they handle through the tome system or through the affinity type system. So they actually sort of get around that one because any race can be a Frostling race. But Draconians really can't have that. It's going to end up being one of those sort of things where I think that the Draconians may come in as a DLC. But I know that between Age of Wonders 2 and Age of Wonders 3, that the flying system was a massive, massive problem for them in Age of Wonders 2. And they solved that by having the flying units then land on the ground in Age of Wonders 3. And then in Planetfall, they went back to having flying units that didn't land, but then they had nearly every other unit could then sort of at least have some sort of ranged ability. Now, I think that looking at what's happening in Age of Wonders 4, there's going to be a lot of units that don't have that range ability, which means that flying units are still going to be a bit of an issue. And I only saw one flying unit in the whole presentation that they did. In one of the siege pictures, there was actually a flying unit on the edge of one of the siege images, as well as I think there was the angelic trait that you could actually then have, which did actually give units flying abilities as well. And so I thought that was interesting as well, just like, you know, have Draconians been dropped because of the flying system, or they have the Draconians been dropped because they're not popular? It's just, and I've noticed also nobody has mentioned the lack of the Draconians in all the videos that I've seen. I didn't even mention it. It was only afterwards I thought, geez, actually the Draconians actually aren't in there. That's a pretty big omission, really.
So you've got this frog race now that I've not seen before. Was that one from one of the previous games that I didn't play, or do you reckon they might have replaced the Draconians?
No, those are new, and so is the rat people or whatever they were. So, I mean, and they're not particularly like innovative or creative, but yeah, no, those are both new races, and I don't know if there's going to there's quite a bit of lore to these games that, you know, you have to kind of dive into, and I mean, like, that really kind of like, I mean, find like outside media and dive into particular like texts and stuff in order to get really into it. But I wonder how they're going to fit into the lore. But yeah, they're not in there. And I'm with you, Daz. I thought that was a pretty weird omission. And I'm assuming, I hate to say this because I'm not trying to say that Paradox is like, well, I guess I am. Paradox is probably going to make it a DLC, right? Like, I'm sure that Triumph at some level wanted to add more and was like, nope, we're going to make that DLC. We got to remember we have expansions and DLC to sell.
Yes, as far as the DLC is concerned, I look back to when they brought Planetfall, because Planetfall was already under development before they then went into partnership with Paradox. And it's not just, they weren't bought out by Paradox. It was a mutual decision, you know, that both Triumph Studios and Paradox went into. And Triumph did actually negotiate very, very stringently that they were going to have a limited number of DLC. They weren't going to do the DLC bloat that Paradox is sort of well known for. And in that sense, they didn't mention that at all. And that was one of the things that I was quite interested to see, if that was another omission that wasn't actually addressed one way or another. But looking at what they did, it's a very complete game that they actually sort of showed. Like, I'm thinking, where could you actually add DLC to it? And really, it's just the extra tomes. There's not a real lot that they would need to sort of add through DLC. So I think it'll have to be limited again. I don't think it can be anything. I don't think they can use the Paradox model of bloating the game out through DLC. I think it's going to have to be similar to what they did with Planetfall. Planetfall didn't have enough DLC, in my opinion.
So I thought that Planetfall actually released in a really good state. I know that it went through some minor changes with later updates. There were a few things that they changed, like UI stuff, and they added more features, and there was like 4 DLC. But actually, I felt that Planetfall itself, when it launched, it was a really good game as it was. And I'm hoping that Age of Wonders 4 is going to kind of launch in the same way, because like Daz has just said, it looks very complete from what we've seen so far. There's loads of content. So yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how many DLCs they're going to release. I think it's fair to say, by the way, as well, Paradox overload DLCs on their core flagship in-house titles, definitely, you know, on their kind of famous grand strategy games. But they don't always do that with other, you know, titles that they sort of publish for other people. Like, I don't remember tons of DLC for you know, some of the RPG stuff that they've released, or for Warlock 2, you know. So I don't know. I think that they are a bit of a mixed bag, but for the most part, they tend to put out polished games. Well, yeah, I take that back. They don't always put out polished games, but I think that at least judging on the strength of how strong Planetfall released, you know, I've got some hope that it's going to be in a decent state.
Yeah, well said, actually. I think that's a good point, because the other studios that they've kind of gobbled up, you know, it wasn't MechWarrior. Was it MechWarrior?
Battletech. It was Hair. I just looked it up. It was Harebrained Schemes, who also did Shadowrun games as well.
Right. And when they came out with Battletech, that wasn't like, you know, thrown into oblivion with DLC. So
I think it was 2 DLC for that.
Yeah, which is totally normal. And honestly, I'm with Daz too. I think that Planetfall didn't get enough. I was really, really happy to see more and more DLC come out for Planetfall. And they were getting creative with some of their stuff. I mean, the Shakarn were one of the better races, and that was a DLC race. And I mean, I'm okay with the DLC and expansion set. And I honestly don't have any issue with that at all whatsoever if the base game is going to be as good as it looks. So if they want to come out with DLC that adds cosmetics and, you know, new leader types or races or whatever, I'll probably buy all of them, because I love Triumph Studios and I love the people there. Honestly, I've gotten to know Leonard and a few of the other ones, Sickbach, as he calls himself, and Jordy and all these other guys. And, you know, they're really good people, and they genuinely care about what we think as a community about their games. And I will buy all their stuff as a result. So if they could have said, I mean, don't make too many. I don't want to spend hundreds of dollars on this Paradox, but I will spend a lot because I want it.
I do want to ask you guys, one thing I've always found with the Age of Wonders games is the battle system is very good, and it's probably one of the best sort of turn-based combat there is out there. But I do find, especially even starting early on, that the combat is for me, it's quite stressful, and it's really hard. And if you make a mistake, you basically got to start over again. And because it takes so long, it kind of, I struggled to get through a game of any either Age of Wonders 3 or Planetfall. Do you guys have any idea what they could do to sort of alleviate those sort of problems, especially early on?
Yeah, look, I think that they've, from what I can see, they've addressed it. What they've done in Age of Wonders 4, from what I can gather, the actual size of the actual battles themselves are smaller than what they've been. They look more compressed, so it looks like you're sort of going closer to you're starting closer to the units. The second thing is that they introduced into Planetfall, which I thought was fantastic, was that if you didn't like the way a battle went, whether you won or lost it, you could always replay it. Now, I've relied on save scumming with all the Age of Wonders games ever since they first came out, because they are brutal, as you say. They're brutal in the tactical battles. And so the fact that they're promoting the save scumming now, you know, directly, and I saw that in Age of Wonders 4, in what they showed, they did have a replay button there again if you didn't like the outcome of the actual battle. So, A, I think the battles will be a little bit faster. B, you can do a replay whenever you feel like it. And you can also, in Planetfall, you could actually then just quit as early as you liked in the battle. If you make a mistake on turn 2, just quit, and you can then just load back in that save for the battle. So you can actually start the battle whenever you feel like it. And so that'll be in there in Age of Wonders 4 as well. That wasn't in Age of Wonders 3. So Age of Wonders 3, I think, was extra brutal because unless you were save scumming a lot, which I do, it was a difficult game. I'm still in the habit of going Control S whenever I start any sort of battle in any Age of Wonders game to actually have a save that I can go back to. And the third thing I think that which you guys have already touched on is the fact that as a unit now takes damage, and as the units themselves start to drop from within the actual group, the full amount of the damage that's being dealt becomes less and less. So it's more intuitive. Whereas in the other game, you could have one unit left out of a massive stack, and it would still do the same amount of damage. So intuitively, it didn't seem like it was as big a threat as it actually still was. And so you had to think abstractly when you were actually playing the game. You couldn't actually think intuitively. And so I think that by that combination of everything that they've got, the smaller scale, the intuitive way that the combat works. Also, I couldn't really gauge exactly how the random number generator system seemed to work, but it did look like it was much more of a min and a maximum style with the damage and also the two hit So it seems more intuitive than Planetfall was as well. Planetfall was a very confusing mess with the way that you had the, you know, the 25% that would be a graze, for example. I didn't see any of that in Age of Wonders 4. So I think the combination of all of those factors will make this one a bit shorter, more intuitive. It'll still be complex and very, very strategic, which I like. But it still will be sort of one of the more difficult in terms of tactical battle games, which, again, I personally like that. But I know that does frustrate a lot of players. But I think this will probably, it looks like it's going to be a better system overall.
Yeah, I mean, there's something else that I want to touch base. I mean, first of all, everything you just said was going to be what I said, actually. I really like the replay option for combat because, for me, I would just auto-resolve. And if I didn't get the result that I wanted, I would just try it. And, of course, that only works once, but you then can do exactly what Daz was talking about. You can reload your saves and stuff like that and just go back to the beginning of combat and get the result you want if it needs to be that, if it's that important, right? But I also think because the way that Planetfall was set up was that the units, I mean, there were some units that were very important. And if you lost those units, then you definitely want to do the best you could to keep them. But like they were a little bit more expendable. So I just wasn't so worried about, you know, losing a couple of units here and there. The other things that really were exciting to me through the reveal were the, first of all, that there was, I mean, I want to go back to that event system because as I was reading some of the previews, they were talking about how, like, you know, the event system could lead to, like, the one that they brought up was, you know, you might potentially encounter somebody selling slaves or captives or whatever. And if you agree to take those prisoners off their hands for whatever money or whatever, or you fight them to free them, then it changes the way that potentially like the settlements and stuff like that are going to be responding to you as you interact with them. And I think that was really cool. And of course that may lead to, you know, different options or different quests and stuff that come up later. But the other thing that really, really got me was that when they fast forwarded to turn 69, which I think is funny that they chose that turn number, but they chose turn 69 to fast forward to, and they were showing how basically as that group that they had was starting to expand and starting to take over the land, that it was slowly becoming this like snow covered land through the cryomancy spells that they were using. And it was just evolving, right? And the area around them was evolving to basically like almost like be more hospitable for them. And I thought that was great. And it was a really, again, another way that I think that Triumph Studios is trying to figure out ways to make the game feel more fun as the game progresses, because it changed the entire landscape of the map. And I can't tell you that there's just so many things about what I saw that I was just really excited about. You know, there's also, it looks like they've brought over the Empire mode from Planetfall. So instead of it being like, you know, you're going planet to planet, it looks like you're like taking like magical warps to another land and doing that whole thing. You know, yeah, the Pantheon system that they were talking about. And oh man. And then there's also a screenshot on the Steam page itself that shows a clear, like, you know, it's almost like a culture tree or some sort of like skill tree that further hones in the type of person, the type of, you know, race that you're leading. Affinity tree is what they're calling it. Thanks, Daz. So, I mean, God, I'm going to sit here and just wax poetic about a game that I've never even played before. It could suck and we could be really excited about nothing, but everything I saw just looked really good. And it really was, it felt like the Triumph Studios had a finger on the pulse of what worked for Age of Wonders 3, what worked for Planetfall, what really needs to change for 4X games. And I'm hoping that they pull this off because, I mean, there's a lot of excitement and I want to see it succeed.
Yeah, I was also really excited to see that kind of environmental changing thing as well. What I think Age of Wonders series really needs, and Planetfall was a real step in this direction, I think, is a way to bring the player into the Fantasy 4X style of things. This is something that Fallen Enchantress Legendary Heroes did really well because it had an excellent kind of quest system that was kind of optional, but also was well written and there was loads of it as well. So it kind of didn't get boring unless you played the game a lot, right? And you start to see them over and over. But I think that Fantasy 4X really needs some more RPG elements. And I think Age of Wonders always did the character development stuff really well. But I think that this new way of drawing the player in by, yeah, having this kind of environmental change going on where you can cast spells in order to change the landscape, where you can kind of modify your race, you know, and turn them into these kind of frostling orcs or whatever, This is the kind of stuff that makes Stellaris really interesting. I think that adding stuff like that into the game, providing that it is well balanced with the rest of the game mechanics and it's not just superfluous and kind of skin deep, then yeah, I'm all for it. And I think that this could be the depth that the Age of Wonders series needs, because as I see it more as a tactics game with a sort of 4X layer on top of it. And I think that if they start, you know, increasing the depth of gameplay within the strategic layer, it's going to make that transition finally into a really, really full-fledged Fantasy 4X title, you know, with the full RPG elements and all the stuff that we kind of expect from those games ever since Master of Magic. And yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's like everything that both, you know, Ben and Rob have been sort of saying, it is one of those things where it's going to be much more immersive, I think, with the choices that the player actually makes. The thing I was really interested in actually was, I don't know if you've read the dev diary that they just put up as well on the same day, but Leonard actually had mentioned in there that almost Planetfall was almost like a test of what they could actually introduce and what different sort of systems could be put into a game. And so they were using that almost as a gauge, I think, to sort of see what would work and what wouldn't work, just based on what he sort of had said in their dev diary, which means that, and because I don't know about you guys, but I was really surprised at how innovative they've made Age of Wonders 4 compared to Planetfall. Like there was, even though there was a callback to, for example, the province system or the territory system, it was there, but not in the same way that it was in Planetfall. I was seriously just expecting Age of Wonders 4 would literally just be Planetfall made for fantasy. And I'm really impressed that they didn't just do that. And I would have been happy with that, to be honest. I would have been very happy with just a Planetfall with a fantasy setting. Because so many of the other games that we sort of see by different companies try to just reuse the model that they've already got. You know, there's so many games where they've got, particularly if they go space and fantasy, they try to make use of the same engine and it often doesn't work as effectively. But I think that what they've done to go from Age of Wonders 3 to Planetfall and introduce so many new concepts in that game, and then to really have a really good look at both systems and think, how do we make the best system for Age of Wonders 4? Like, I was super impressed with that approach.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, there's a few things that just weren't really revealed yet, I guess you could say, that I still am a little eager to see, because I saw their diplomacy screen and it looked a little bit, I mean, should I say just like, you know, bare bones or rudimentary? And I'm hoping that they take that same level of ingenuity and creative thought and apply it to the diplomacy system, because I've always thought that diplomacy in 4X games was either just boring as hell or just completely worthless. So I'm hoping that they can do something with that and make it a little bit more fun. I did like that the like opposing heroes were looking at each other, and that looked pretty cool. But I mean, I'm hoping to see something where we might see some of the events and stuff like that, or even some of the evolutions. I don't know, just the way that they're doing things. I'm just hoping that somehow also bleeds over into diplomacy and changes that and makes it a little bit more fun.
Actually, if I can just ask you guys a question, what did you like when they brought Planetfall out? They had this. You could argue this exactly the same thing, that diplomacy was pretty ho hum all the way through. But the interesting thing I sort of found is that when they actually had brought through, was it one of the free updates? They actually brought in the secret traits with the different heroes, and so the AI would come in. That they'd come in with a constructed race or constructed hero, and then they also had like two hidden traits, and you didn't know whether they're going to be xenophobic or, you know, whatever the trait might actually be, whether they're going to be sort of more secretive. And so it was always random every time you played it. But what it did mean was that when you actually had the diplomacy, you had to consider those secret traits. When you first come across the AI player, you didn't actually know what they were. And then that would then push their personality. And I found that even though the diplomacy system was fairly simple in Planetfall, I found it really engaging because of those secret traits. Did you guys have a similar outlook on that?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was actually reminded of that as I was talking. And I loved that system because, I mean, you started to get a feel for what people were, or like their secret traits based on their like text interactions with you. You know, if they started reacting in a certain way, you're like, okay, all right, these guys are xenophobic or whatever. And, you know, but that's the thing, right? Like, as you would normally, I mean, like, I'm not trying to get like, ooh, if it was real life, but like, if you are interacting with someone that you've never interacted with before, as you discuss things more with them and you know, propose things, you would start to get a feel for their personality traits. And I loved that about Planetfall. And you're right, it was a free update. And I just thought that that was a great system that made, you know, what you, like you said, a rudimentary diplomacy system much more engaging at some level, because, you know, it was kind of fun to figure out who was what. And sometimes it would throw you off, you know, you'd meet another group of Kirko, and you know, as the Kirko, you'd think, all right, well, they're going to be friendly towards me, but no, they're xenophobic and they hate you too. So, you know, and it was a surprise, because you would eventually figure that out. And if they bring something like that over into Age of Wonders 4, I'm just sounding like such a fanboy already about a game that I've never played before. But if they bring it over, I don't know what can beat that in my mind. Like, from everything I've seen, I need a diplomacy system that feels somewhat engaging, even if it's not like super engaging. If it's something like that, if they brought over the secret traits like that, that would be enough for me, and heaven help me.
Yeah, so I think that upgrade to the diplomacy really made a difference in Age of Wonders, because it kind of went from, you know, that kind of standard 4X diplomacy system that we see in every game to something that kind of worked better for the side of diplomacy that kind of originally it was added to these games, right? So there's a couple of things that diplomacy does in 4X games. One is that it gives you a way to interact with the AI, to kind of like manipulate them in a little way in order to kind of get things that you want out of them. But the other thing, as a game design element, is it kind of makes the AI feel like a player rather than just playing against a, you know, a computer. And the immersion side of that is really, really important. Some games are better than others in incorporating those diplomatic interactions into the core mechanics of the game. So, for example, Master of Orion, the original, is a perfect example of that. That was core to the gameplay. You know, the diplomacy really was the key to winning. And so, you know, it kind of tied in really, really tightly with the rest of the game mechanics. But I think that this new addition that they brought into Planetfall really added that extra level of immersion. Like Daz and Rob were just saying, you know, you had these characters that you couldn't really predict, and you had to spend a bit of time talking to them in order to get these traits out of them. I actually went back and played Planetfall the other day for the first time in months, and I usually get about halfway through a map of Planetfall and then kind of get bored. I don't know why. I don't think it's a boring game. It's just that I've got too many games, and you've got to commit to a game of Planetfall, right? But I played that the other night, and I was playing for hours, and I really, really, really enjoyed it. And I noticed that about the diplomacy, that it is way more engaging now. It gives the Age of Wonders kind of vibe a little bit more personality. And if they can translate that into Age of Wonders 4, I don't know how they'll do it. I get the impression from what Daz was noticing that they're not just carbon copying, you know, mechanics from Age of Wonders Planetfall into this one. It seems like they've used that as a base to build in new systems. So let's hope that they do something, you know, like a little bit different that will tie into this kind of, you know, the quest system and some of the other things, you know, like the alignment, you know, they've got the good, evil, chaotic and lawful sort of axis now as well. So yeah, let's see what they can do with that.
Actually, I had another question for you guys as well. Like, I guess with Age of Wonders 1, Age of Wonders 2, they used that matrix like from Dungeons & Dragons. Are we allowed to mention Dungeons & Dragons now? Does that mean that all the podcast is then taken off away from us?
No.
Anyway, with that, you know how they have, like in Dungeons & Dragons, they have order, neutral, chaos on one scale. Then they have on the other side they've got good, neutral, evil, and so you end up with this this matrix of like it can be chaotic good, chaotic evil type sort of situation. And that used to be a feature of Age of Wonders 1 and Age of Wonders 2, which I actually really quite liked. And when they brought Age of Wonders 3 out, they dropped all of that, which I actually felt at the time was a mistake. In the end, I didn't mind that it was gone, but I've noticed that they've brought that back now. So the affinities. So they've got order, they've got chaos. So they've got two different dichotomies there, plus a few other little things as well mixed in with that. And then they've also got on top of that a whole veneer with the good and evil system as well, which they still did have sort of in eventually in Age of Wonders 3, which they didn't actually handle very well, I've got to say. There was often you'd be playing against AI that didn't know that they were evil and that they were getting good units, and so the good units would then leave them all the time. And I'm hoping that they fix up those sorts of AI issues, which I think that they will. But overall, I'm sort of really quite happy to see that matrix-type system come back. It's certainly much looser than what it was in Age of Wonders 1 or 2. But do you guys have any thoughts on that whole affinity system where they've actually now got so many different ways of actually pushing the game into different directions?
I'll be honest, I didn't really play Age of Wonders 1 or 2 enough to really be able to comment because I don't really remember. I've played Age of Wonders 1 a little bit in retrospect and I really like it actually, but I didn't really play Shadow Magic yet, so I can't really comment on that. I remember in Age of Wonders 3 the system, and it seemed it had, I think the alignment had some effect on your interactions with people and some of the decisions that you took, you know, regarding letting, you know, killing certain creatures or letting them run from you, which was in Planetfall as well. But I don't really remember, to be honest with you, Daz.
Yeah, I'm the same way. It's been so long since I've played the original few Age of Wonders. I don't normally, I mean, shoot, I don't remember what happened yesterday, let alone what happened 20 years ago. So any system like that's going to, of course, hopefully bring, like you said, replayability and stuff like that. It just seems like they've taken everything from the previous iterations of the series to better effect, and I'm improved on it.
In the old games, like in Age of Wonders 1 and 2, they used the system, the good, neutral, evil, that like your race always started off that way. So the orcs were always evil, the elves were always good. And so you had these different, like the different factions never ever changed their alignments. And so when you were doing diplomacy, you only ever could actually make friends with other goods, or the neutrals had a little bit of leeway with the good and the evil. They could actually switch one way or another, but they never, ever changed. When they brought in Age of Wonders 3, and I forget when they sort of did bring in the good and evil sort of aspect to it, but they but that then changed things. It made it more nuanced because, which I didn't like at the start. I quite liked the old way of that. It was just simple. It wasn't even diplomacy. If you were an elf and took over a dwarven city, that was okay because I think they were both good from memory. So you could actually make use of that particular city. But if you took over a neutral, you could sort of make it work. But if you took over an evil, you had to destroy the city. And so in the end, I preferred the Age of Wonders 3 system because the actual diplomacy was a little bit more nuanced than Age of Wonders 1 and 2. But that was how they used the good-evil sort of system in that particular one. But the affinity system, I think, in Age of Wonders 4, as I say, looks to be much, much more fleshed out. Like Order and Chaos are just two of the affinities. I think there were six affinities. I forget what the others actually all were. But but Chaos and Order were two of the opposing ones. I think there was Nature. I think there was Mechanics, things like that. So it was quite interesting.
Yeah, that's refreshing my memory, actually. I remember that now. So, yeah, I mean, it's all great stuff. I'm really excited for it. I think that it's easily one of the biggest Fantasy 4, or actually just 4X releases in a long time. And I love seeing that kind of fervor among the community, among, you know, even just the YouTube community, the Explorminate community, the Age of Wonders community. I saw just so much excitement, and that was really fun to see. And I'm telling you, like, we've talked about this before, but I really believe 2023 might be going down as one of the best years for video games ever. And that includes strategy games in so many ways. So I'm really excited about the year. And I have shit. There's like, that wasn't even on our radar. Like, I honestly did not think Age of Wonders 4 would be coming out in 2023, but now it is, and now it looks fantastic. I mean, can you really think of many years that were like this? And on top of that, well, I just want to get into it soon here, but I'm going to give Ben a chance to talk to you in a second. But, you know, we also have games that are already there that will hopefully improve and maybe come back to them and feel like they're contenders now too. So those being Galcev 4, I think there's some real decent meat on the bones there that sounds like Brad and the company are very aware of how to fix and make better. And then, of course, Distant Worlds 2, which I really want to get into here in a second. But before that, Ben has one thing to say.
Yeah, so we were talking about this last time when Jesse was on the podcast, but we've got Conquest of EO coming out too, the Spellforce turn-based tactical game by, I want to say, it was the guys who did Fantasy General 2, which is an amazing game.
Owned by Gravity.
And that is looking up to be a really, really good game. And there is some similarity with Age of Wonders. Do you think they're different enough that they're not going to compete with each other, Rob?
I think so, very much so. I think that Spellforce is much more of a role-playing game with 4X elements, whereas, I mean, of course, Age of Wonders 4 looks way more classical 4X with some RPG elements. So, and there, you know, it's a mix between, I mean, the Spellforce game is much more of a mix of like Thea and 4X and fantasy. So, I actually was going to pose this question and I meant to, and I just, you know, just quickly before we move on, I wonder if you guys think that there's enough room for the three games really being Spellforce, the Master of Magic reboot, and Age of Wonders 4. I mean, the pessimist in me and the one that thinks that, you know, the hotness there is way more exciting saw Age of Wonders 4 and completely forgot that Master of Magic exists. And I honestly don't, I feel an excitement and fervor for this new iteration of Age of Wonders that I never felt for the Master of Magic reboot. So, I mean, what do you guys think? Is that going to be the death knell for the new reboot?
I don't think so. I get asked this a lot since the actual launch came out, and I think that Master of Magic scratches a couple of itches. It scratches a nostalgic itch where people actually, because it is a very, very good reboot of the original game. So I think that that is actually like, so I think that there's nostalgia around it. But also, if you were trying to, let's just say you had someone that was sort of like 50-50 about committing a lot of time to a strategy game, a fantasy strategy game, would you recommend the complexity of an Age of Wonders game, or would you recommend almost the simplicity of a Master of Magic game? So I feel that Master of Magic really does fit right into that sort of entry level through to medium level strategy game. It's not super complex, but there's a lot of complexity in there, but you don't have to learn a lot to actually get in and enjoy the game. Whereas a game like Age of Wonders, I think actually then does actually have, it takes it to another level. So I think they actually sit on different plateaus essentially of the, in this, within the same genre. And I think that a lot of these games actually do sort of work. Like you look at the other great games around it. Would you say that Dominions competes with Age of Wonders? And I would say no. Deity Empires with Age of Wonders, a little bit, but it's still, you know, it still is its own entity. I think they all actually sort of fit separately in that sort of sense. And I haven't had a lot of people have actually been recommending Spellforce to me, but I haven't actually seen it yet. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that one brings as well. But I think there's room for all of them, to be honest.
You know, it's funny you mention this because as soon as Age of Wonders 4 was really announced, I immediately thought, oh boy, poor Spellforce, because I think it will be overshadowed by Age of Wonders 4 because...
Okay, let me just interject real quick. I mean, I am, just because I completely disagree, I actually think that people who are waiting for Age of Wonders 4 are going to jump into Spellforce in an attempt to like satiate that desire before Age of Wonders. Because I think...
When is Spellforce release? Is it February?
Soon. Really soon. March? He said quarter one, and I think that he made it clear in the Discord and their forums that there's going to be a wide berth between Spellforce and Age of Wonders 4. I think that a lot of people are going to pick it up in hopes of like scratching that itch. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's not exactly the same time, then it's fine. But yeah, I was a bit worried about it because Age of Wonders has had, you know, so many iterations and there's much more fans. Whilst this Spellforce is not like the other Spellforce games, I'm not sure how many of the RTS Spellforce guys will be interested in now a turn-based game. I don't know.
Yeah, so to answer the question, I think that Daz pretty much summed up how I feel. I think that Master of Magic is its own niche. I think it was there, it was made in order to provide a kind of fresher update for that old formula. It's very, very close to the original game. It's so close as to be almost exactly the same. It's not quite, but it's, you know, for a new player, they're not going to really see a lot of difference. You really have to know the games relatively well in order to kind of start seeing where Muhar's version differentiates. So I don't think they're going to be competing. The other thing that's really good about Master of Magic, which Daz touched on, is that the tactical combat in Master of Magic is really fast and it's quite nuanced. I actually think there's a little bit more complexity in Master of Magic than Daz is giving it credit for. And I know that you didn't say it was simple, Daz, but I think to compare the two, Age of Wonders has got a steeper learning curve by you know, definitely at the start in order to learn how to play because it's brutally difficult. But Master of Magic's not easy either. And I think that to really get good at Master of Magic, it actually takes quite a long time. There's a lot of work. It's not work, but there's a lot of play time involved because there are so many builds, particularly if you're playing on a more difficulty setting, that you have to be aware of, you know, certain tricks that the AI can use in order to, that it's going to bring to you, that you can lose a lot before you start winning. So yeah, I think that they are very different games. They've got a completely different pacing. The fact that the tactical combat in Master of Magic is so much quicker, it will relieve some of like what Drexy was talking about, where he kind of gets fatigued. I also get that issue with the Age of Wonders, actually. Sometimes when I've played four or five big battles in Age of Wonders 3, I can't really be bothered to play anymore because I feel like I've had my gaming fix then. And you don't really get that so much with Master of Magic because the battles are so much shorter. I don't think that it's going to compete with Conquest of EO either. From what little I've seen, they seem like quite different games, actually.
Well, we'll see. I think that it's pretty wild to... You know, it's weird that I feel like these games are on the same cycle. Like all these games, a lot of the Space Forex games and Fantasy Forex games seem to be on the same release cycles. Every 4 or 5 years, they all compete with each other. But anyway, so you know what? Let's get into Distant Worlds 2, because I want Daz to tell me how to like it. And that's your job now, Daz. How do I like it?
Well, that's a hard one, actually. It's like, I still think it was the best game of last year. I guess, you know, like, people were expecting me to say Dwarf Fortress, but I still think that it was a much more polished game in the end, Distant Worlds 2. I think that whether, you know, with these sort of games, like, particularly when you're talking simulation type games, more than, they're not really a strategy game, it's much more of a simulation. And I do feel that when you're dealing with a simulation game, the way I look at Distant Worlds and the way I look at Dwarf Fortress as well is it's a story generator first and a strategy game second. And so I try not to force the strategy aspect of it too much, but still try to use strategic elements to then get what I want out of the story. And so for me, I like that it presents different scenarios. You don't know what those scenarios will be because the whole galaxy is sort of moving around you at that point in time. You know, it's a very rich galaxy, the way it sort of is. Well, I think where it will end up eventually, and I'm trying to think back to like the first Distant Worlds and comparing that to the, you know, Distant Worlds 2. So forgetting about Distant Worlds universe, which was extremely fleshed out by the time it actually had sort of, you know, matured, Distant Worlds 2 is the first step on that process again. I feel very heartened where the game has got to, and I think it's become much more stable. I'm liking the changes that they're making to the game. It probably hasn't gone as fast as I would have liked those changes to make. The one thing I'm really looking forward to is actually how they handle modding, which they haven't really addressed yet. And I think that that's a big, big problem with the game at the moment, is the lack of moddability. Well, it can be modded, but it's just difficult. And so for me, though, the overall approach with Distant Worlds, same as with Distant Worlds 1, is to actually see it as a story first, and that you're actually more just watching a story develop and then sort of interject just where you need to, rather than trying to play the game. And I think people who play the game, like with Dwarf Fortress, you know, you play the game and you just get frustrated because you're trying to min-max everything all the time. And I think that those games, they lose a little bit when you play it that way. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think for me, well, the launch kind of was quite disappointing for me. I was like so excited for it. But, I mean, we kind of covered on the previous podcast where, for me, where it is at the moment is it's a step back from the original at the moment. Now, I'll preface that and say I know in the end they will get there, but for the time being, it just needs so much more content for me to go back and play that game because I played the original so much. So it's, for me, it's sort of a step back, especially the lack of races. And as Daz said as well, mods, you know, I think modders can see a lot of things that sometimes developers can't because they're so ingrained into their idea. Now, if they start adding really good mod support, maybe the design team can look at that and say, wow, okay, that is actually a good... They see a working example of what the players are thinking rather than someone just putting an idea on the forum, which is untested. With modding, you can actually test these ideas. So, yeah, I think modding support will be really important and just more content. As Daz says, I see it as a good base for them to work on, but for me, I think it's going to be a couple of years until it's going to be in a really good state, which, to be honest, the original game was exactly the same. We've got to remember that this is a very, very small team and it's just going to take time. So if they release any DLC, even if I'm not going to play it, I will start buying the DLC in anticipation just to support the development more of the game, because I know they will get there in the end. But currently for me, I struggle to play it as well.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous that they're not going to make it a few years. I mean, I'm not sure what the financial like return is on a game like this, but I just feel like, you know, even though they are small, I don't think there was as many buyers as they probably expected. I know that they invested a lot in like the new engine and, you know, I mean, of course there's all that dev time too. I'm super nervous that they need to kind of hit it out the park soon or they're just not going to be able to continue.
I don't know, though, because this is the original, the exact same style with the original, especially because the price was so high when it was on Matrix only. It started off rough, and then as each expansion came out, it more and more of a fan base. So they, I think they sold way more of this than they ever did of, at least before Universe came out with the original Distant Worlds. So I think as long as they keep improving the game and the fan base, it's one of those games that it wasn't a big hit, but over time it grew and grew and grew and grew more fans and people started speaking about it more. I think you're going to see the same thing with Distant Worlds 2, where I think they're not pressured to earn a mega bucks like a Paradox game or something. So it's going to be, it's, I think Matrix will be stupid to drop it early because I think it will be one of the, I mean, they do very niche games. I don't think they will drop it early. So I know they're moving more and more into more popular games with stuff like Starship Troopers and Dune and Battle Sector as well. But I think it's going to be one of those games like the original where over time it's going to just get more and more fans and it's going to be something that sells more units over its lifetime rather than what you get where you get a massive peak where people buy a game when it comes out and then suddenly that sort of tails off really fast.
Yeah, so a couple of points. I think that it probably did sell reasonably well. That's the impression that I got just from kind of loitering around various forums and things. So I also, you have to remember that this is Eric Rutins, who is one of the, he is the like director. He's one of the directors of Slytherin and Matrix. So he's really high up in the company. And this is his like pet project. It's his baby project that he's putting a lot of time and effort into, I think. Yeah, he spends a lot of time, you know, actually working. Like if you see what's going on in the beta, you know, the closed beta forum, Eric's constantly engaging with beta testers, you know, talking about the game all the time. I think he must spend a lot of time on this game. And so I really, really want it to succeed because I like Eric. He's really cool. He's a really cool guy. So I think it's done okay. It's obviously done all right that they're able to start thinking about things like DLC and stuff. And I'm not going to say too much on Distant Worlds because I feel like we spoke about it in the last two podcasts quite a lot. However, I was sick as a parrot last time and I wasn't able to really collect my thoughts. So I want to just very quickly outline an issue I think with Distant Worlds that's really holding it back for a lot of the fan base of the previous game. And I want to add a caveat that I think that a lot of the criticism that I've seen coming from returning players might be a little bit tinted with rose-tinted goggles, because I think a lot of the issues that some people are talking about with Distant Worlds 2, they're actually still issues in Distant Worlds Universe. If you go back and play that game, it's got many of the same problems because they're design flaw issues, in my opinion. However, that doesn't mean it's a bad game. And the best criticism that I have seen so far, and it's something that I'm starting to see now in Distant Worlds 2 now, the more that I'm playing it, is the game, and Daz is just kind of like tacitly said this, the game really, really shoehorns you into playing automatically. And I find that in this one, way more than in Distant Worlds Universe, I'm playing on auto pretty much the entire game. Like Daz said, I really feel like I'm watching a story and I'm only interacting at certain points. And because the game mechanics have really shoehorned you into this automated style of play, which I really didn't do in Distant Worlds Universe. I got to be honest, I used to manually control like so much. There's so much less to do manually that I think it's a real turnoff for a lot of original players. So Codeforce need to look at this because at the moment, it's if you like playing with the automated style and seeing it as a sort of colony simulation, you know, as a kind of an ant farm game where you can, you know, make strategic decisions, it's really good still. It's a really good game. It's way better than Distant Worlds Universe. The combat's way better. The ship designer is way better now, in my personal opinion. But there's less of those moments where you're like, I want to make a space station over in the far out galaxy. I'm going to put I'm going to make it a refueling station, but I'm also going to make it like a monitoring station. You just don't really have that in this one. It's just, there's some, you really kind of like shoehorned into a certain kind of play style. The other thing is, and this is an issue with Distant Worlds Universe as well. So this is a game thing, a game design issue, is that there's a lot of detail in the game, but when you start tinkering with it, kind of a lot of it doesn't add up. The numbers don't all add up. There's certain weird things that just don't seem to make sense. Like, where does tourism income come from? Nobody can figure it out. you know, there's so many little janky things when you start peering into the detail of Distant Worlds that don't really work. And it was like that in Distant Worlds Universe as well. If you're a min-max man, trying to figure out how Distant Worlds works, you're going to go crazy. So I think that it really is best enjoyed, as Daz is saying, you know, kind of playing this sort of sandbox game where you are taking these decisions. Because if you're the sort of guy who likes to micromanage the colony levels, you know, the levels of materials on the colonies, or you're trying to figure out which asteroids to mine first because you need specific type of economy, you know, you need a certain kind of resource. Well, you don't. The resources don't matter that much, at least until later in the game when you're at war. And, you know, there's no point in manual colony management because the automation can do it far better than you anyway. And what is the point? Because you never run out of resources anyway, really, apart from Kazlon sometimes. So this is kind of what I mean. It's like when you start peering into the details of the game, you kind of start realizing that, and apart from in specialized situations, a lot of it doesn't really matter. And that bugs me because it's a real wasted opportunity. I think that if the game had a better resource economy, in the sense that you've got all these different resources, but like if you could trade them, and if like for example with a game like Imperium's Greek Wars, where that's got an amazing economy because the economy is tied into the diplomacy, and wars break out over it. So if just with Distant Worlds, right? If you've not got enough steel, you can't build ships. The problem is that steel is so like easy to get that unless you're really, really pumping out loads of stuff, you're going to run into a money problem before you run into a resources problem, like 90% of the time, apart from the start of the game. And a game like Imperium's, where the resources are more unevenly distributed, so your neighbor might have steel. I want steel, so I've got to trade with him. I could go to war with him to get it. Oh no, I can't because I haven't got enough steel I can't build any ships. And that starts creating more interesting dynamic relationships between the players in the game. Do you see what I mean? So I think that just with a few things like Codeforce, please add a slider that can change the distribution of resources. I know it's going to break the game a bit, but we've got to try because it's that kind of interaction that is going to make, it's going to turn the game from being a sort of ant colony simulator where you can kind of like, you know, take, you know, do make certain decisions into a game where people can really plan out this crazy empire that they want to make, rather than just let it sit on auto. Because at the moment, letting it sit on auto just seems to be the default way to play.
Yeah, I think they're really good points, Ben. I think that the resources are important at the start of the game, and then they become unimportant very, very quickly. And I think that that has to be addressed at some point. I also think that what you were mentioning there about letting the AI sort of control things like colonies, for example. Colonies I find to be a bit of a problem because colonies actually do end up essentially, you know, like they don't make a lot of sense, as you sort of say. So these are areas that I think that will need to be addressed. And I think that all the points you're sort of making about Eric and Elliot sort of essentially with, you know, a very small team of people sort of doing it, it is a passion project for everyone involved, really, including the players. But I do agree with you. I think that those points, particularly the resources, colonies, those sorts of aspects, those sort of game mechanics don't really – they need to be better fleshed out. I also sort of thought that I've always wanted the game to have – like instead of it you actually knowing or not knowing text right at the very start of the game, I would love to see a more of a random distribution of the amount of the tech that you've actually got in the research. For me, it's just not quite where it needs to be. And I hope that once again, when modding comes, if those sorts of things can be opened up, that'd be awesome.
I think that it's really important to give Distant Worlds to give Codeforce the credit where it's due. There are certain systems in Distant Worlds that's way better than in Universe. The combat system is way better now. If we had more better manual control and better pathfinding on these ships, the combat system is really good fun. And I like the ship designer. I still spent ages in it just trying to figure out all these different ship types. I really, really like the ship designer. I think it needs a bit of tweaking, but it's really, really good. There's so much to like in this game. So I'm not crapping on the game. I think that there's some core issues that they need to address that will take the game from being a good game into an excellent one. And I think that that's what it needs. It needs to be an excellent game in order to bring those original players back. And at the moment, it's kind of a good game. So, you know, let's see what they do. But a little bird tells me that there are some interesting changes coming into the game that are going to start making things a little bit more varied. So, I think that we're going to see some interesting changes coming in.
Yeah, I'll just reiterate what you guys have said that, I agree with most of your points that, the game does so well on all are in many things that you just don't feel the need to do it anymore, which has taken a large part of the game away. I agree with the resources. I'm not smart enough to know why, but they're not as important. A lot of them are not as important as they are in the original. And I don't understand why Kazlon now is the only fuel type, which I'm not sure what the idea was behind that as well.
Yeah, me too. That was a real mistake, I think. There must be a game mechanic reason or an engine reason they've done that. Maybe an AI thing, I don't know. But I think that was a real mistake that they took that out. I think that, you know, it's kind of reduced the need now for the different hyperdrives. They do have different numbers in them, but I liked it when there was like different resources that you could get.
Yeah, I completely disagree with that. I think that having one fuel source means that you can then wage economic war much more effectively than you could in universe. It's one of the big important things with the game is to be able to when you're attacking an enemy, you've got to think about where's their Kazon supply coming from for a long war. Can you control it? Can you actually get to start to build your own mining stations on those things? If you've got to then look at Kazon and hydrogen, it weakens the overall economic war aspect. Like I've loved Distant Worlds too, where you actually end up, you know, you wait until you've actually got the ability to go and destroy every single one of their Kazon supplies and build your own mining stations, then make peace with them, and then they have to buy all their Kazon off you. And so that for me is a really, really good way of playing. It means that it really starves the enemies when you actually do that. So I like just having one aspect you've got to focus on in terms of the fuel.
Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, everything was pretty spot on with this whole discussion. I think that the main takeaways are that they have to do something about resource scarcity, and you know the rest of it will come. And there's some balance issues, of course, but I think that those are all things that I think will be addressed. And as Ben kind of hinted at here, there are some things in the works that we're aware of that we can't really talk about that will address some of the issues that we have with the game. You know, and I'll say too, just as my last little point, my personal addition to this discussion is that I've always been a huge proponent of asymmetry within races. And I thought that the original game did something unique with that, and that each of the races had their own victory goals. And that's, of course, carried over. But I always want to see more. And that's something that I don't see in the base game of Distant Worlds Universe. I'm sorry, Distant Worlds 2, Lord. And I'm hoping to see, because I think that the times have changed, right? I think that games like Stellaris, like Endless Space 2, like Galciv even, have pushed that asymmetry forward, and Planetfall, if we want to talk about, you know, terrestrial games. But all of them have made a real effort in making each of the factions, each playthrough, rather asymmetric, right? And of course you can tweak those based on how you want to build your civilization and so on and so forth, but you know, the base version, or the, like, you know, the intended playthrough of a particular faction in a lot of these 4X games now feel asymmetric, and I need that in my games. I need that to feel good about things, to enjoy myself, you know. I mean, it goes back to games like Sword of the Stars, where they had very specific preferences for their technology trees, and I mean how they even had their own warps and stuff like that, which I thought Stellaris should have kept, but we won't get into that. So yeah, those kind of things, I would love to see, like, new warp types for factions. I would love to see very unique technologies for each of them, very unique gameplay orientations, and I feel like that's something that could happen, and I'm hoping that that's something that they really focus on as the game moves forward and as they begin to add new races. And of course they need to do that with the existing races as well too. So that's my point. I think this discussion was great. I'll let you guys make your last few points, and then we'll wrap this thing up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think I agree with Daz. Modding needs to be put in ASAP, because a lot of this stuff can be alleviated via modders, especially if it's easier for them. Do they want modders to be able to add a whole bunch of races if they're going to release them as DLC, possibly? I don't know. But yeah, stuff like the resource stuff, drive types, stuff like that, is something that modders can sort of throw their ideas into the hat, and maybe the base game can then take it on. So yeah, I think modding support right now would sort of help speed up the development of the game. Yeah, that's basically all I have to say. But yeah, looking forward to what's coming down the pipeline.
I'm going to actually push back on that a little bit. I really don't think that they should add modding until the game's nearly done. And the reason being is because when you do that, right, players start getting, you know, modding the game in all sorts of kind of crazy ways. And every time there's an update to the base game, they all get upset because all the mods get broken. So I'm a proponent of finish the game first. And if it's still not good, then mod. But that's just me. That's just a little bugbear that I've got about modding. I really love modding in games, contrary to what I sometimes claim. But what I really don't like is when people, when the demand for modding starts messing a game's development up. It really bugs me because I see it happening quite a lot. That's just my opinion. Daz, before we finish, because we've got you on as a guest, I'm really keen for you to give us some recommendations for games that you're excited about for this year for us to go out and check out.
Oh wow, there's so many actually. It's as Robert said before, this is probably going to be one of these. I think we're in a golden era, not just a golden year. I think 2022 was an exceptional year for games, and I think 2023 is going to be even better, like what Robert sort of mentioned earlier in the podcast. There's so many. I think you can look at any of the Hooded Horse games and just put a tick next to pretty much any of their games that are coming out this year, and there's a lot coming out. I'm even forgetting the names of them. Microprose has got a fair few games coming out. Slytherin's got like some amazing games coming out, like with I'm really looking forward to Field of Glory Kingdoms. That's going to be awesome. That's one of my most anticipated games of the year. I mean, you look at Microprose has just brought out Second Front, which is basically what's coming out at the end of January, but I've got the version of that. That's an awesome game. There's so many DLCs coming out as well for different games. Like you look at Shadow Empire with the DLC, that'll be hitting pretty soon. Distant Worlds, you know, sort of got other content as you guys have sort of hinted about, which we're all under NDAs except for Drexy.
You're still sore that you're not in that beta, aren't you, mate?
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, this, I don't know, like it's one of those things where like trying to pick one or two games is really, really tough. You know, like it's sort of sorry, what was that?
Zephon. Zephon.
Oh, Zephon, yes. Well, of course, you got the developers of Gladius, you know, like that's another great game as well. Like there's just so many in the pipeline, and they're going to be coming pretty thick and fast. So, yeah, there's just a heap of them. I meant to get a list together actually before coming on the podcast because Ben had mentioned, you know, what games you're looking forward to, and it was like there's just too many. Like there's just way, way too many.
Yeah, I think 4X releases last year was a bit like there was some disappointments, but there was also some interesting stuff. But like general games, like if you ask Jesse from Explorminate, he'll tell you that last year was one of the best games we've ever had, one of the best years we've ever had for tactics games. And he's saying that this year is looking even better. So I think that in general, gaming, yeah, we are, I agree, Daz, we're in a golden age, especially now we're through this kind of post-pandemic period where like games were getting delayed, games were being released prematurely. I mean, we didn't even cover half of these games last year, but there was a bunch of games that came out last year that were in development for ages that came out, and you know, with a bit of work they were really good. Like Warhammer 3 is a really good game now. Mountain Blade Bannerlord is a really, really good game now. There's loads of them. So I mean, there's stuff that we don't even really cover, so many games. So I think that, yeah, the future's looking bright if you're a strategy gamer or a 4X gamer or a tactics gamer. So yeah, let's finish off here, Rob.
Actually, before you guys do, can I just ask one quick question? Like, I don't know if you watched the Slytherin podcast sort of broadcast the other day, but they mentioned that there's only one more DLC coming for Field of Glory. Have you guys, like, I know that some of you, like, I think you played that a bit, Ben, but only one more DLC. I was actually quite sad to hear that. So, we've got a whole lot of new games coming. We've got like a franchise which is sort of winding up, which, I'm wondering what's coming next, but I think as a community we've got to sort of acknowledge what Field of Glory has brought to the table.
Which Field of Glory? All of them. Medieval.
Medieval's finished. There's no more DLC coming for that. And really? Field of Glory Ancients has got one DLC coming, which will be coming pretty soon, and then that's it for Field of Glory 2. There'll still be Field of Glory Kingdoms, but no more Field of Glory 2.
I wonder what
they
must plan
have
is
Field
then.
Of Glory 3 then coming surely.
I mean, it's a massive game. This is more Richard York's area of expertise, so I need to talk to Richard about that because this is his kind of his what he plays a lot. But I love Field of Glory 2. It's an amazing game. It's one of my favorite games. I know it's only sort of loosely a tactics game, but I put it up where with my, you know, it's in my top five tactics games, or tactical war games, if you want to call them that. I think it's up there in my top five. It's so good. So I'm quite surprised to hear that they're discontinuing DLCs for it. I don't know if maybe the developers have had enough, or maybe they've got another game coming out. I mean, they might be doing some, you know, something like Sengoku Jidai, the new version, or you know, Pike and Shot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really like your breakdown that you did, Daz, about a month ago or a few weeks ago, where you were talking about the history of the Field of Glory games. If you're interested in this topic, go and watch Daz's chat tactic, and Daz will have to tell us when it was. It was probably about a month ago, but he went through in great detail talking about the history of that series and where it's come from, you know, from its board game backgrounds. Anyway, yeah, so I'm quite surprised to hear that about Field of Glory. It is a really, really good game. I need to play it more. It's just I've got too many games, but that's one of those games, I think I've said before, where I can play it anytime I play it, right? It's engaging right from the start, right until the end, and you never quite know who's going to win. So that's why I love it so much. It's just really, really exciting.
Right, so to wrap this up, and we will need to do that. I do want to mention a couple things that I know that I've said this more than once. Like I with Drexy, you know, you're right. Zephon is probably at the top of my list for me. I really think it looks fantastic. I mean, Age of Wonders Planetfall, of course. I'm sorry, Age of Wonders 4 being up there too now. Spellforce Conquest of EO, and then Aura History Untold, which has not been talked about enough. And I know it's because no one's played it.
Which one is this, Rob? Come on, tell us more.
Aura History Untold. It's Oxide Games, who has made Ashes of Singularity, which was published by Stardock, and now they have moved in, are now being published by Xbox and Microsoft. So this like very, very like well-funded historical 4X that is doing some very unique and different things that I can't really just talk about yet. I'm telling you guys need to be watching this game, because it looks like if you guys go look at the screenshots, you're going to be like, wow, this looks beautiful. But there is more to it than just the beautiful graphics. And they are definitely trying to shake things up with the historical 4X formula. So keep an eye on that. It's Aura History Untold. And I'm telling you, there's going to be, I don't understand how people aren't talking about it. Maybe it's because
Rob, the reason people aren't talking about it, because we've, unlike certain people who get all the inside information, it's only just been announced and there's been not really much said about it by the developers. So
I know.
Of course, we can't talk about it, because we can look at the screenshots and say, wow, that looks really cool and high production values. But as far as gameplay things, we don't know.
Rob mentioned this in the staff channel the other day, and he was like, you guys, you don't even like 4X games anymore. How is it you don't even know about this game? Like, you know, am I the only guy who likes 4X
it's
games?
It's on my wish list. That's the best I can do.
Yeah, I'm telling you, then you just keep an eye on it, because I know that they're doing some closed beta soon that they're going to open up, you know, to the public for. So if you're interested in historical 4X, or if you're just interested in seeing what the hell they're doing, I suggest you try to get in, because I went into it with very, very minimal expectations and walked away thinking that they might just be onto something. And that's all I can really say. So I think that that's a very promising 4X game, and that definitely has a 2023 release window, as well as so many other things. And there's one game that I wish I could talk about that has a 2023 release window that hasn't even been announced yet, that will also be in the running for 4X Game of the Year. So it's going to be a wild year.
How dare you do that to us, sir? Leave us on
that. I know, he's such a tease. He always just teases us.
NDAs, man. This one's Loctite, and if I said anything about it, I'd probably get killed. So anyway, this will be an amazing year. I'm super excited. I hope you guys are too. I think that'll be the last time we go into how many things are great about 2023. So with that being said, this was Rob, Ben, Drexy, and Daz Tactic for Explominate. Until next time, keep exploring.